often in the 40s films, and you know, this applies to Hepburn
Hepburn,
and
exactly.
I think Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Crawford did some of this.
Yeah, and whenever they're in these roles, then they're considered as, once again, threats to their male counterparts almost entirely, and end up either because of their ambitions sacrificing their romantic ambitions, or else they in the end sacrifice their career for their prospective husband.
Catherine Hepburn always, you know, she'll be very tough and Eastern schoolgirl and crisp and brittle up until the moment when Spencer Tracy has a demands a showdown, at which point she goes all cuddly. The film ends with everyone satisfied that marriage and maternity will out.
Well, Chris, Betty Friedan in The Feminine Mystique looks at women's magazines of about the same period and the decade after and sees exactly that sort of thing. Earlier in the century, you know, in the 30s and early in the 40s, lots of stories in magazines, women's magazines, about career women, often described in such a way as to make them seem very attractive and appealing and vibrant and all the rest of it. But again, always you see, and this is, you know, not even, this is far below the level of a Catherine Hepburn that we're talking. Always at the end, they decide that it's best to retreat to the, you know, the vine-covered cottage and all the rest of it. And so the career women always, they're either miserably unhappy because they pursue their careers, or they give up their careers and they become mothers. So it's the same thing again. The thing about images of women is that they're repetitious. Universally, no matter what you're talking about or where you're looking.
As far as literature goes, I found something that gives me hope, and that is in the area of nonfiction. Recently, we've seen some biographies.
Yeah.
The latest installment of Anne Morrow Lindbergh's diary, the books about Eleanor Roosevelt after Franklin's death, Margaret Mead's
A Black Printer,
new autobiography.
No, that's very true. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but last year when I first started teaching women's studies courses, and I've sponsored or taught in lots of others besides the one that I mentioned, or as much as I could squeeze in one year, it got so depressing because, you know, because there is this repetition, and you go from, you read 20 good-sized works of literature, and you go back to the medieval period, you go forward into the 1960s, and you don't seem really to be getting very far at all. And I was reading an article by a woman who happens to be a friend of mine who teaches women's studies at the University of Massachusetts, and she pointed out that a good antidote to studying images of women in literature is to read especially autobiographies, because it gives one hope that there was something else there besides what you saw in whatever writer you were looking at. I think that's very true.
Does this hold true for films also, as opposed to fictional and commercial films in the area of documentary or art films? Would the image be changing, at least, do you think?
I really can't think of any good examples of biographical documentaries on women that have been done.
Madame Curie. Remember, the whole point was that her great husband, Professor Curie,
and besides, she died of radiation poisoning.
Exactly. Women should stay in the kitchen and out of the laboratory.
I don't think Madame Curie would have done very well in the kitchen.
She should have died of food poisoning.
Yeah.
No, the only thing that I could even think of comparable have been the cinema verite studies of couples. What was the one, a married couple, was that name or something, out of Canada. And
you mean, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, and so all I can say is at least that would offer the merit of being somewhat realistic, certainly much less stereotyping than you get in your average theatrical release.
I think one interesting thing too, I can't say anything about it, but it's an idea that's just been brought up to me recently, but an interesting thing to study in film and in theater as opposed to fiction or poetry and in ballet would be, or in dance, would be the images of women who are actresses or dancers or whatever. In other words, women who are playing roles. In other words, women are already playing roles, but then if they're also playing professional roles on top of that, and you get a very nice you know, I'm not sure it's nice, but it has a sort of extra complication to things. There's somebody in my department who's interested in working in this area. Women who are portraying in a very self-conscious way certain fictionalized or theatricalized images. But then the whole idea of the actress in films, so many films or plays are about actresses.
Of course, what's interesting with that, and this goes back to the group of 40s actresses we're talking about, is by and large, at least, and I'm sure there are many exceptions, but it seems to me that Hepburn and Stanwyck and Russell and Crawford, all of them pretty much project one image when you think of the names in it. And the only person I can think of that might be different than that might be Bette Davis.
I'm not so sure she's different. But
well, I can at least think of a couple sides of the coin with her, yeah. as opposed to Hepburn, who is pretty much always
Hepburn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think we have a call. Let me remind our listening audience that the open telephone line number is 864-4530, and we welcome your questions and comments. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead with your question, please.
It may be that Mr. Fowler said this. I'm not sure, but I've wondered about it since he said it. As I took the comment down, it was, women may not be what people think they are, but that's what people think they are. And I guess whoever it was that said it, I'd be interested in knowing more what was meant by people as opposed to women.
I knew the moment I said that I'd put my foot in it. No, actually, it's not so inaccurate as I now as I supposed a moment ago. I think women. I referred to women as they themselves and men think they are, and I think in general, I think in general, women are as much, you know, suckers of their own image as they are victims of the male image of them. So I meant that literally, women as people think they are.
Not just Elaine May, but all the women who... mostly men who do all of the producing?
Yes, indeed it is. One could count the women filmmakers on one hand, I think, probably those who've made anything much.
But, you know, I sort of agree with you, because I'm thinking in just very personal and really very limited terms, but I was talking this afternoon with a friend who was an officer of a women's club in this area, which is an organization mostly devoted to married women, and they were sending something out in the mailings, and one woman wanted to be addressed as Ms. on the mailings, and the reaction of this other woman, was that this was something that would only be used by women who, you know, couldn't catch husbands. That was the phrase, quote unquote. And so my friend had to say, well, that was not true at all. But, you know, women who are comfortable, or at any rate perhaps simply clinging to socially defined roles, then feel very threatened by the idea that these may be limiting in any way.
Sure, and let's bear in mind too that women represent a good half the film going audience.
That's true.
And the films are made to they're made for the most commercial possible reasons on the whole, and certainly most Hollywood films are, and if someone could demonstrate to a producer however pig like sexist or whatever he was, that women simply were demanding all at once a new image, well, I'm quite sure he'd come up with one.
Right. It all boils down to the pocketbook, where that sort of thing is concerned. It's not the same.
But they're not demanding a new image, at least not in sufficient numbers, I think, to assure one.
But in Lawrence, you have to go to the movies because there's nothing else to do.
All right. To our telephone listener, does that answer your question, or would you want to go on?
Yeah, it pretty much does. If we could just say maybe women are not what most people think they are.
Very well.
Here's at least one woman who's really asking for another image.
I approve of your idea, and I'm prepared to break the generality and say most people.
Fair enough. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. We're going to take a brief station identification break now. Let me remind you, our telephone number is 864-4530. We'll be back with a feminist perspective in a moment. Hello, welcome again to A Feminist Perspective. Our topic tonight is the third installment of a three-part series, The Image of Women in the Mass Media. We are exploring the image of women as presented by contemporary literature and films. Our guests tonight are Dr. Janet Sherestanian, Assistant Professor of English here at KU, Mr. Giles Fowler, Kansas City Star film critic, and Mr. Chuck Sack, who is in charge of the classical film series here at KU. I think that our caller brought up an interesting point that I'd like to pursue a little further about the participation of women in creating this image. Do indeed women make this image of themselves? And I think we've pretty well established the nature of the image during the first part of the program.
Well, I guess maybe the place to start on an answer to that question might be with it cataloging a few of the women that are currently involved with making film. We've mentioned Elaine May, and other directors are really hard to come by. Agnes Varda would be one.
Shirley Clark, I was trying to think.
Yeah, right, yeah. Shirley Clark. Susan Sontag gives us a total of four directors I can think of off the top of my head.
Lots of writers. Eleanor Perry is one.
Penelope Gilmore,
yeah.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
And in editing, certainly I think it's generally recognized that one of the best editors is a woman, Dee Dee Allen, who is responsible for the editing on Arthur Penn's film Bonnie and Clyde. But still, there are, relatively few, in fact, even stronger word than few, there are almost no women involved in film production at the higher levels.
Also, Joan Didion made an interesting point in a recent article in the New York Review of Books when she wrote about the social structure of Hollywood. It isn't merely a male-dominated society, but it's a society that believes that things like polite marriages and all are, you know, the real moral verities. It's a society that demands conventional attitudes of its own people. She made the point that that the idea of Hollywood society as a free-swinging, creative, fermentive place is entirely wrong. It's a stuffy place full of conventional values of all kinds, and always has been. Family values. It's full of family ties. This man's son becomes an editor in the film produced by his uncle, and so on and so on and so on and so on.
Which brings us to the second half of the answer, that the way I would answer it, and that is, any of the aforementioned women that are involved in making films, or even more than that, any that would become involved in film, are ultimately answerable to their producers. And
yeah.
As far as I know, producers are all probably 99.9% male, and actually, at the level of finances, sex matters very little.
Yeah, but money matters a lot.
Yeah,
most women don't have much money.
Yeah, and consequently, because of the material factor here, the women that do make it are not going to be in any position really to immediately begin making feminist statements. If Elaine May were so inclined, she certainly wouldn't have done so in her second film, Heartbreak Kid, because A New Leaf was kind of shaky at best.
Jane Fonda's doing her best, but so far she's not quite in the position. She really is driving directors crazy these days.
Well, what about films made by women strictly from a feminist point of view?
There's no such thing.
No, I don't mean on a commercial level.
I think there's no such thing on a non-commercial level.
Oh, I think that there is such things. And in the office, we have lists of films and where they are available. Films specifically for women and about women, including some films that were completely produced by an all-woman crew. But they have not achieved any sort of popular success.
They're meant to achieve popular success. I think that's all gone by the board for these people.
I was reading an interesting article in the Saturday Review from August of 1972 concerning a women's film festival held in New York City, where they had some European films that had been acclaimed as critical successes. They had some art films done by women, some films strictly stating the feminist point of view. They suggested that they were boycotted by the press in New York City, that the New York Post critic didn't attend. The notice in the New York Times turned up on the obituary page with the feature commentary disappearing between coins and gardens. And that even with this sporadic attention, that some of the films were acclaimed as very, very good. And armed with these reviews, the women filmmakers still couldn't get support to make a second film. So would you gentlemen care to comment on the possibility of a conspiracy against some of these types of film, as was suggested in the article?
Well, I think conspiracy might be too strong
a term. That's a bad word these days.
Yeah. but, well, instead of going with conspiracy, let's say that chances are very good that this type of a thing, had it been on another topic, would not have received very much attention anyway. That by the board, nonetheless, you know, why were these things done? And I think, yeah, again, I would say not conspiracy. I think individually probably the New York Times editors thought, well, this has relatively little
I think
merit in my value
system.
Disinterest
is
the
better.
And
better
it, you know, ended up where it did. Still, if the films were all that good, I'm sure that someone would have chosen to release them theatrically in New York if they felt there was an audience for them. And so, you know, it's really hard to say without...
It's hard to say since we've never seen
any
without
the films coming up for public viewing.
I think it's a question of news judgment. I mean, there is simply... We've got to admit that there's relatively little interest in most of these films. You know, in just a very quick scan of this thing, I can't imagine a film critic suddenly leaping in the air and saying, "Oh my gosh, we've got to get over there and you know, and really look this over." It just doesn't look that good, really.
I think I'd like to go into the film critic a little bit more deeply, but right now we do have a caller. Let me remind our audience: the number is 864-4530. And hello, are you still on the line?
Yes, I've been trying to think of films that portray women in, that I've enjoyed, that have portrayed women in fairly intelligent ways. And I can think of three or four films that I think have been quite, that I've really enjoyed or appreciated. But in each case, the women have not been portrayed as very happy women. But my thought on this was that for the most part, films, at least contemporary films, which deal with current issues, never portray people as very happy. I mean, they don't portray men as very happy either. And I was wondering if you could comment, let me first tell you of what films I'm thinking of. I'm thinking particularly of two Joanne Woodward films, Rachel, a couple of years ago, and more recently, The Effects of the Gamma Rays on the Man in the Moon, Marigold. And then I'm also thinking of two Gwendolyn Jackson films, Women in Love, and then a more recent film, which I can't remember the name, which involved a triangle, two men and her. Maybe one of you can remember the film. Anyway, I was just wondering if you could comment maybe particularly on these films, which I feel treat the problems of women fairly intelligently, but do not portray the women as happy women or content women.
Let's see. I'm not sure what kind of comment you want. I don't think it's necessary to portray anybody as particularly happy or content if you're dealing with a situation that's not a happy situation. I'm not entirely sure what the question is.
Well, if any of you are familiar with these films or
these
particular actresses and the parts they play, I would just be interested in your comments on what's wrong with these images of women.
I'm not sure that anything is, except that I suppose from a feminist viewpoint there might be, and certainly in The Effects of Gamma Rays on Man and Moon, Marigolds, the woman is a sort of destroying bitch goddess type. It's indicated, suggested that it's not her fault at all and that she has good instincts. But But I can see how some might take issue with that. In Racial, it's a woman whose fundamental loneliness is not having a man. And I can see how some issue might be taken of that. She's a school teacher. She has a career.
Yeah, but that's relevant to the effect of gamma rays, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think in both cases that the characters are limited by their own ambitions, certainly. So that what they want is so limited that they... You know, they don't even see any possibilities for themselves in their situation.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for these characters who are so limited to be looked upon as being admirable people.
Yeah, well, that's true. But then, of course, on the other hand, that's almost tautological that goes around in circles, because if you want to talk about the mother and the effect of gamma rays, what she wants is simply some sort of decent existence for herself. And of course, it's appropriate that she has two daughters and not two sons, or a son and a daughter. And no, that's not very much, but that's what every woman with a husband takes as a birthright, essentially, or marriage right, I guess you'd say. So really, it just circles back on itself, you know, and she's stuck, and so is the film. And I thought the ending of that film was really sentimental. But I can see that they couldn't, again, they couldn't figure out what to do. It seems where filmmakers can't figure out what to do with women, they you know, they go into sentimental fantasy, and where novelists can't figure out what to do with women, they drown them.
I think I might be hearing a split across the table here as far as what the men saw in these films and what perhaps the women saw.
I haven't seen but one of them.
I'm not so sure.
I don't really think so.
I think, for example, of Rachel. When I saw it, I saw the 35-year-old school teacher who was very limited, but not limited in her own capabilities, but limited by society, by needing to take care of her mother, by teaching in a small town with the role expectations put upon her, so that she was forced almost into a childlike existence and tried to break out. And all of this I saw as very true. And then again, they had the ending. She needs a man to help her break out of this kind of role, of this kind of existence.
Well, part of her problem, though, too, is not having to do these things for her mother, but the fact that she chooses to do them and that she chooses to stay there. Again, this may be faulty memory, but as I remember the film, and maybe this is my viewpoint coming into a play here, but it seemed to me that part of what the film kind of suggested was that earlier in her teaching career, she could have gotten away and decided, for herself, she could stay, you know, she would stay and be the noble child and help her mother. And suddenly she's, you know, at this turning point in her life, realized that's not what she wants at all. But the most she can think of to do to break out of it is not to leave the home, or not to leave her mother, but instead to go out and begin at least some type of social life.
But she had been living up to social expectations for herself as a teacher with an old mother and so on.
It's interesting that I just finished teaching with an independent study student an anthology called Images of Women in Literature. It's edited by Marianne Ferguson. And this is an interesting anthology because it's very fat and it has lots of selections in it that you would never stumble across any place, and by writers that I have literally never heard of, many of them women. And there's a section, it's divided into images, and one section is on the old maid or the spinster. And one of them is about a school teacher, you see, who sits in the park on a Sunday and watches everybody go by and feels in a kind of illusion that she's participating in existence because she's watching them. And she, you know, it's the same sort of thing. The single school teacher is always seen in that way. And there's a young couple at the edge of the park, and other end of the park bench, and they're very rude, and they make remarks about how she's, you know, an old biddy, and what she's doing spoiling their Sundays. And the narrator seems to take the viewpoint that indeed she's missing out on life, but in fact she's really rather happy. In other words, if you look at it from her point of view, she's not unhappy, but if you look at it from society's point of view, she's supposed to be unhappy, therefore she's got to be unhappy. But that's especially a ticklish situation, because I think even women writers are afraid of dealing with the idea of the aging single woman, as opposed to the single woman who's just striding out into a new world at the age of 22 or something like that.
There was another single school teacher that I remember in the film Billy Jack. And again, if I remember right, Pauline Kael thought that this was one of the few film roles she'd seen that treated the woman intelligently, and the specific problem there was the rape scene in it, and yet there was some. The rest of the film was, for me, very unsatisfactory, and yet, in preparing for this program, I was trying to think of recent examples of realistic women that you know, and their problems that might be in some way acceptable to feminists, and that was the only one that I could think of that would even come halfway close.
Did you see Tell Them Willie Boy's Here? The picture about him.
Yeah.
As I recall, there was a sympathetic and strong-minded sort of school marm in that one, wasn't there?
Yeah, played by Catherine Ross.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. There again, maybe the actress is getting in my way.
By the way, I'm reminded that if you want to see any films now that take a really outrageous position in opposition to everything that the feminist movement's about, well, you merely have to look at the works of Sam Peckinpah, and especially his latest, Getaway, in which the educated woman, who is presumably the intellectual equal, certainly, to her very macho gangster boyfriend, made a kind of a gun mall, and
actress gets in the way there, too.
Yeah, having put this on Peckinpah, I might point out that in the case of Ballad of Cable Hogue, he drew a very fine character
all right,
there.
Yeah, I'll grant you that, in Straw Dogs, though, that's...
That seemed to be a function of her character. I mean, her husband is no more admirable than her.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but that's an interesting kind of dichotomy that you find, where men and women are showing a relationship to one another, where the woman is a troublemaker, the man is, you know, without strength. And so, in other words, it becomes an either-or kind of thing. Either women are subservient or women are dominating and destructive, but rarely do you find any sort of simple attempt to deal with the possibility that women and men might simply be equals and stuck with the same problems, in the same world.
An interesting counterpart to this would be, I think, Truffaut, who we were talking about before, whose women always seem to be much stronger than the men in the couples.
Yes.
And particularly maybe an example of one of his women that might be acceptable would be Catherine in Jules and Jim. I've seen it argued in print that she's chronologically the first liberated woman to show up in films. I doubt if I would agree with that myself, because I don't think she's that liberated, but at least it's a character that a woman would argue in favor of.
The women in Two English Girls, however, have a very different position toward the man. He's decidedly the dominant character here. With one of them, he has decided the dominant character. With the other, rather less so. But still, in the triangle, he's the strong corner, I think.
I think we've been criticizing films and literature for most of the evening, and I would like to get into the critic and the critic's influence on the image of women at this point. I think specifically, I'm addressing this to you, Giles, but I think everyone else can have a viewpoint. I have a review here given by Louis Funk, from the New York Times News Service. He was reviewing the revival on Broadway of Clare Booth Luce's play, The Women.
Yeah.
And essentially he said that this is a feminist play, and the performance is rather mediocre. And then he goes on and says, well, no matter. The girls are usually nice to look at, if not to listen to. This is in his criticism of the play. It resorts to the girls are usually nice to look at, if not to listen to.
Louis Funk is about their 19th string critic,
that's good.
And I mean the fact that he could say The Women is a feminist play is I think pretty well suggests his own intellectual level. It's anything but a feminist play. It's a play that every woman in The Women is terribly dependent on a man. The one career girl, as I recall, is desperately unhappy. Almost all their conversation revolves around men, home, how to treat their husband, how to keep their husband when he runs off with the other girl, and all this kind of thing. They're obsessed with fashion, with hair salons, with places where you go and exercise your body into a firm, trim, man-loving perfection, and it's in no sense a feminist play. It's an absolute outrage against the movement. If I can possibly imagine it from a feminist perspective.
Well, this was what I was going to ask you. As a man, as a critic, can you look at a film and imagine it from a feminist perspective?
Yes, I think so. I don't make a habit of it. I try to look at a film from a perspective of its its honesty and treatment of all people and of all relationships, and if it doesn't seem to live up to some kind of honesty, I don't usually like the film. But I don't consider myself as a voice of feminism. Perhaps Pauline Kael might qualify, or perhaps Judith Crist or the other women who are very big in film criticism.
All right, I think that our time is about up. Right now I'd like to thank our panelists very much tonight, Janet Sherestanian, Giles Fowler, and Chuck Sack. I'd like to invite you to tune in to A Feminist Perspective next Monday evening, and invite you to attend a lecture on the KU campus Thursday evening. Garrett Harding, who is Sigma Xi lecturer from the University of California at Santa Barbara, will be presenting a lecture on abortion, contraception, and ethics. It's Thursday at 7:45 in the forum room of the Student Union at KU. And now, until next Monday night, thank you for listening. This has been A Feminist Perspective.